morning and welcome to the Dream Ramble on Today's flood, we appreciate you being here. I'm here, happy to be joined today. On my right, I have my Bobby from Hillian, and I am Grayson, I am the Freshman. When I call your case, I will call it twice for purposes of recording. Twice. To the extent there is any confidential information and you don't want to broadcast or archive, I just want to remind you that these are live broadcasts on TV and that they are archived for video and audio. So with that, we will begin with our first case of the day.
Brent Kuhn, representing Dave Cavis in this case. Please the court and counsel. The issue before the court today pertains originally to a divorce decree that was entered back in 2010 by Judge Randall in the District Court of Douglas County. And in that divorce decree between Mr. and Mrs. Cavis, one of the issues that was dealt with concerned two rental properties here in Lincoln that the parties owned and acquired prior to the marriage, but also was allocated as far as the parties during the marriage, to the extent that both parties were awarded an equal interest in the property. A provision contained within that decree provided that originally provided that Mr. Tavis was to be reimbursed for 50% of the operating expenses as related to those two rental properties. That was amended by court order to reflect that he was to receive 100% reimbursement of the operating expenses.
Does our record indicate how that came about, that it went from 50 to 100?
I'm the one that filed a motion for a new trial because I think what the court had intended is that Mrs. Tavis was to reimburse for 50%. I mean, that's what I think the judge intended. 50% of those operating expenses because he was the one that was in control of managing the properties at that time. But in order to make the record clear, we wanted to make sure that the court, that it was clear in the decree that he was to receive 100%. He would be contributing 50, she would be contributing 50, and then the net proceeds would be split equally after he received a deduction or an allocation to him for his premarital interest in the property. Amendment to the decree was entered, and that set for some period of time. And then Ms. Tavis filed a motion with the court or a complaint with the court to ask for an increase in support. And then subsequent to that, she filed a motion to compel because contained within the decree was a provision that those properties were to be sold. There was testimony during the trial on the motion to compel the sale, of efforts made by Mr. Tavis to try to sell those properties. There was testimony by from the standpoint of Mrs. Tavis sending an email to Mrs. Tavis saying she didn't want any interest in those properties anymore.
Let's get to the basis. We're going out of time.
Okay.
I'm having a lot of problems. Okay. First of all, everybody seems to agree that he's entitled to some type of property.
Right.
What he received
ultimately in this case was these direct sales expenses from the sale of the property. So what the judge did in this case was he gave him whatever those sales costs were associated with the sale of the property plus the payoff of the mortgage at the time of sale. That's what he got in the way of reimbursement, in the way of operating expenses. And then he got his
deduction for the mortgage payments, deduction for the taxes that were outstanding, other miscellaneous needs items in the closing statement.
Correct. Okay. Those were all through the date of closing.
Now, some of those items normally would be taken care of through the escrow money that had been paid in or the payments during the period that this property was being maintained. That money then is paid directly to your client. And I don't see where that amount was included in the amount of sale.
It was included from the standpoint, it was a deduction. There were escrow monies that were paid post-closing that were deducted for purposes of arriving at what the net sales costs were. We presented evidence as to all of those items. We presented the closing statements to show all of the credits and all of the payments that had to be taken care of as of the time of closing. What he didn't get reimbursed for.
Okay. Okay, so he gets another approximately $4,000 for the two properties. But part of that money was paid in taxes.
Correct.
And the taxes then were paid out of the proceeds of the savings.
Correct.
So why wasn't the money in the escrow included in the value that was received for it?
It was. It was included. Escrow monies were included on the closing statement in terms of balancing out all of the amounts, and then there were some escrows that we accounted for at the time of closing that were paid out post-closing, because when you pay a mortgage, a lot of times you'll have more paid in on your taxes and your insurance than what is necessary to the date of closing. Those escrows did get accounted for post-closing and were included in the documentation that we presented to the court.
What document?
The documentation in terms of all of the canceled checks, all of the receipts, all of the evidence that we offered in terms of all of the money that went through the bank accounts.
But it's not included in closing.
In closing statement, on the closing statement, it indicates what all of the payoffs and everything are as of the date of closing.
It doesn't show the amount of the escrow being necessary, the escrow payoff.
And at the time of trial, we offered evidence that showed that there were certain escrow monies that were paid back. There were utilities that were overpaid on deposits and things. All of those things were paid back, and that was provided for in terms of how we showed it.
I don't understand them, because the escrow is there to pay for the taxes.
Right.
Taxes were deducted from the proceeds of the sales.
Right.
I mean, your client got the money again from the escrow. So then he get that twice, and then he got half of the, then he get credit for having to pay half, and then he got all the escrow.
No, all of the monies that he received at closing were applied as against what the obligations were at closing. And then anything that he received post-closing in the way of an escrow return was accounted for at the time that he received the money. For what?
Accounted for what? For example, taxes. Okay. Why would it be taxes?
I understand that. I understand that.
Taxes would be taxes for the money.
And all I can tell the court is that I believe that those were accounted for in the evidence that we offered. They were deducted in terms of what the obligations were between the parties. When you closed the transaction, you got all done, you got these net proceeds, okay? And what happened, right, and what happened is that there were monies that were paid back. That $38,000 included monies that they received post-closing from escrow.
Where does that show up on the settlement?
It doesn't show up on the settlement statement. It shows up on the additional evidence that we offered at the time of trial showing these are the post, because you don't have them on the closing statement because they're paid back post-closing. So we offered testimony as to what the post-closing escrow monies that were received. That showed that all, when we got to that $38,000 number, that's a net number. That is after the escrows have been accounted for. Okay? As far as what's the issue in this particular case, the issue is the term operating expenses. And when I originally filed this thing, I thought operating expenses was pretty clear. From the standpoint, it's the reasonable and necessary expenditures that for the operation of these rental properties. What does that include? That includes payment of the mortgage, payment of the taxes, payment of the insurance.
Let's go to what this court. The court found that he was entitled to his operating expenses shown on the schedule.
Correct.
But he didn't do that.
What do you mean he didn't do that?
The judge didn't deduct that. He
didn't deduct the Schedule E expenses? He didn't. Right.
So the one place he says the operating expenses are showing your Schedule E, but I'm not going to give them.
Correct. All he gave to all that Mr. Tavis received was essentially a deduction in terms of he got credit for the cost of the sale and he got costs of paying out of the mortgage. And then there was added back to there to the escrow. And that came back with a $38,000 approximate $38,000 balance. That's all he received. He didn't receive any of the monies that he paid out in cash from his own personal funds. He didn't receive any for the time value of those funds. And he didn't receive any of the things that he did in terms of repairs and maintaining the property.
He also didn't sell those funds to see what the time of cash.
Well,
he listed the $900,000 and he sold for $27,000.
Right.
I can understand when I argue that in the first year. When you start talking about 5 years,
I think common sense says that, look, you have a property that's underwater, okay? You want to hold that property to the point that you're at least going to break even, because otherwise you're going to have to come in and write a check. No, and neither did she. She didn't come to court and say, we want these properties sold until after she filed her application to modify 8 months later. So she was fine with the situation the way it was, and in fact she said, I don't want these properties. Okay, and had she not sent that email communication to him, the likelihood is he could have then gone back to her and said, you know what, I've got to maintain these properties from a cash flow standpoint, you've got to make your contributions as well. But he didn't do that. I think it is.
Even though you've got a court order, that's a court order.
Yes, I think that's the case. I think that she acquiesced to the extent that she said, I don't want these properties anymore. It was reasonable for him to take that statement and do what he did, which was continue to manage and operate the properties without seeking contribution from her.
Good morning. I'm Virginia Alvarez. I'm here on behalf of Mrs. Davis, my partner, Anna Summers, who's with me. She brought the brief. To answer one of your questions, Judge Embody, Exhibit 72 is a reconciliation of the rental bank account, and there's a line item on that that shows the deposit of $99.56 and $1,400 for escrow. So the escrow refund was put into the bank account and is part of the calculations.
And that also would include $3,798.51 on the piece of property.
I do not see that. All I have during the last few minutes is Exhibit 72 showing some escrow refunds going into the bank account.
My problem was when I was looking at it, I could see on the settlements that items that are normally paid out for escrow. That were deducted from the seller, and the escrow account appears to be paid directly to. I'm sorry, I can't say the name right. So, but I've been saying two is the same one.
Yeah. All I can tell you is I went through it at the time and satisfied myself that the escrow refund was in the bank account. To be accounted for.
And let's go to the second part. The judge ordered that he be entitled to his net operating expenses as shown on his Schedule E.
And he got them. And this is how happened. Year in and year out, in 2010, he was in possession of the rental properties. He received the rent. He paid the utilities. He paid the mortgages. Paid all the expenses, for the most part, the property is cash flowed himself. So as he received the rent, he was paying those expenses. So he'd already, he was already down net of rent, less operating. What Mr. Tegman is complaining about is not the normal, ordinary operating expenses that a landlord gets to deduct year in and year out on his tax returns, but those items that can't deduct. So he's coming in post. Trial in his motion to compel saying, reimburse me for the extraordinary operating expenses, the things the IRS doesn't let me deduct. I want to deduct cash advances to my checking account, which I say I have to use to cover mortgage. I want to be reimbursed for interest on my cash advances that I made to this bank. And I want to be reimbursed for my sweat equity and my own labor. The IRS says you can't deduct interest payments on mortgage for residential real estate because you're building equity. It's not an operating expense for capital expenditure. They say you can't, a landlord can't reimburse himself for his sweat equity and his own labor put into managing residential real estate, only if you pay management fees that is deducted from that expense. And he says he wants to pay interest on the cash advance. These aren't ordinary operating expenses. If you ask a landlord, what are your ordinary operating expenses? He's going to look at the schedule and say, these are my operating expenses. A mortgage payment is a capital expense. I'm not allowed to deduct my own time. I'm not certainly not allowed to charge interest on cash advance or cash in or cash today. That's what Mr. Chad asked us to do. He got his ordinary operating expenses reimbursed year in and year out as he violated the court order and continued to help his properties. He's looking for extraordinary.
From an equitable standpoint, he's making payments, he's making mortgage payments so that they can maintain the property so that they can keep money. But when it comes time to sell, he doesn't get the benefit of that. That ownership.
And that's the situation I created for himself by not selling properties in 2010. And to me, it's kind of like the case of Blaine and Fry versus Fry, the two quadro cases where the husband failed to implement a quadro at the time of the divorce, and they're coming in 4 or 5 years later and saying, "Did I use my account to drop, and I no longer have the funds that I was ordered to pay?" And the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court in both of those cases said, "Sorry, we're going to follow our specific language of decree and order the accounts to be divided by the language in the decree. Here, the decree says, sell the property. If you sold the property, you wouldn't have built up equity by the end capital or mortgage payments that were recorded by there, so you wouldn't have your property." I think it's like,
the decree doesn't read. Pre-provides that whatever expenses he takes is accounted for his net of the rent center. We've worked in here, I guess, but you count for the rent service before you give him the expenses. So you're saying that was done in perspective to the expenses he takes for the tax purposes?
It was. The property he collected the rent, he paid utilities, he paid insurance.
You're saying that this demonstrates that the actual, what we call actual expenses, were completely covered by the rent system.
Right, and if you look at Exhibit 71, which is a schedule, you'll see if you add them up in their totality, those properties broke even. I think this case is also like, the first Wilson versus Wilson at 19-103, where a wife was ordered to vacate her home and sell it, and she decided to hold over. The husband came back to court and said, "Reimburse me for these expenses that I incurred during this period of holdover," and the judge allowed him to send it off against property settlement. That was held to be some unpermissible modification. Rather than determining the amount to do. And isn't that what Mr. Tevis did? He just unilaterally modified the decree and said, "I'm not selling the property. I'm going to hold on to it for 5 years." Yeah, she acted after he asked her, and she didn't stand up for her rights. And I think when you read the record, you can see that Mr. Tevis is tired of dealing with Mr. Tevis. And she couldn't go back to court. She was struggling to raise her kids and put now money in. She didn't have money for an attorney to go in and force him to do some work he should have. And also like to go back to like just the familiar standards here, where you look at the term operating expenses and create payment to residential real estate, plain and ordinary meaning of that. You're looking for a definition. Where do you look besides how you do your accounting year in and year out, how you report your income and expenses for taxes? Every landlord knows that's what operating expenses mean. And that's when Mr. Tevis is coming back in here and coming up with a really difficult definition of operating expenses by including interest, if he's charging himself, his own sweat equity, and saying, "Compensate me for all of this stuff I volunteered to do." Ignoring the reasonable definition of operating expenses. And now you're trying to create ambiguity in the document where what was tried, and what measured equitable injury that we tried to respond was a motion, which Mr. Kevin specifically said to the trial said, "I'm not looking for a modification. I just want the determination of the amount due after you tell me that you've turned operating expenses." It's that simple. And Once you define operating expenses using the standard definition provided by the IRS and the standards of the rental real estate, you have a simple answer. And you go back to the line of cases, which includes Wilson versus Wilson, Lane and Fry, and say that's the specific intent of this decree. And that's what we're going to do, is conform to that. And not allow this to be allowed out of court or outpatient.
Is there any evidence on a year-by-year basis of these claimed expenses from District 7? Or is that something that came in as a time of trial?
Came in time of trial. The cash advances to the bank account, and then obviously the interest on his cash advances. I think he assumed that he should pay 5%. And then he produced some emails and a handwritten log of miles to and from and did to maintain properties and such. That was all. So, train of thought is that it's unnecessary. I appreciate the consideration of this case. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand the challenge. We have one more question.
Mr. Kuhn, do you agree with you? Your client has been reimbursed for all of his net operating expenses that are shown on the income tax return.
To the extent that they were offset against rental income during those years, the answer to that question is yes, but not with respect to all of the out-of-pocket costs that he pays.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am.
Case is submitted. Counsel is excused.